Today, the title of my talk is a series of numbers, almost like a phone number, but different. 463-6172. When I wrote these out, I have a hyphen between each of the numbers to make it a little clearer to me that I am talking about a total of 7 sets of concepts, and I'm going to describe part of those today. Next Sunday, I intend to finish the sequence. So if you know these numbers and what they represent, I think you're going to be a lot happier, a lot healthier, and more successful.
I'm going to repeat the numbers, and then I'm going to describe them in a sentence. 463-6172. And this is what they stand for. The 4 driving needs in human personality. The 6 steps of my energy model of life framework. The 3 areas of conflict and upset that you'll experience between yourself and other people and things. The 6 common reactions to upset. The 1 principle of success. The 7 avenues of success activities. And the 2 understandings that will relieve a lot of stress in our lives. So let me start with the 4 driving needs. These 4 driving needs are exhibited by the human personality and driven by the human ego. And these are programmed instructions. If you can imagine, they come with the territory of being a human being. Until we can moderate those things or modify them or bring them under our control, these things are going to be directing how we relate to ourselves, other people, and things. You can imagine them, that these are the basic programming instruction that comes with us as human beings, and they're designed to ensure our survival as individuals. So I'd like to point out that these things are basic. They're not really advanced concepts. So they're just real fundamental kind of programming. What we as adults are looking for over time are advanced instructions, these things that make things go more smoothly, that will help us to achieve what we want, despite the fact that our basic programming is trying to get us to follow it. What we're looking for later on is advanced instructions, advanced awareness that will come only with experience, time and effort on our part, study, paying attention, mindfulness, because it takes some learning in order for us to grasp those advanced programming ideas. I think the point is that all human beings have to contend with these 4 driving needs. Theoretically, they are designed to ensure the survival of us as individuals, but you recognize as social animals, as people who have to deal with other people and things, that we have to take into consideration not just our own individual needs, but other people's feelings, other people's values, other people's desires. So, what are those 4 driving needs? And these needs are defined and described really effectively in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. So you can read more about them. And over time, you can understand how these things are impinging on you and other people that you have to deal with. You can actually see these things in action. So this is how the ego manifests itself through the personality of an individual. The driving need to defend, and I'm going to talk about you, but it's true of me, it's true of everybody. The driving need to defend ourselves from criticism or from emotional, physical attack. And a similar driving need to push aside other people in order for us to arrive first in the race of life. This idea that we want to be first, we're competitive, is hardwired. These driving needs and the ego also manifest itself as the driving need to take all that is the best for ourselves, despite the opposition of other people. And finally, a driving need to hold on to our personal possessions, whether they're relatives, whether they're friends or material goods or achievements, despite any opposition. So when you start looking at those and you go, you should be able to understand right away how you feel about criticism, your degree of sensitivity, how defended or defensive you become when somebody criticizes you, or are you concerned and have you had experiences of either emotional or physical attack? So you can imagine, all of this stuff can be developed and heightened even greater than our basic programming by experiences that tell us, yeah, you really, really, really got to get this need well developed. If you look at those four driving needs, and I'll say in the context of human behavior, if you want to look at them globally, you're going to notice these things are the foundation of wars, family feuds in a single family, or a family feuds of family A opposed to or by family B. You can see the explanation of this idea of a sperm hurrying up the canal seeking to get to the ovum to fertilize it. The slow one is not going to get there. It's the fast one. So you can almost hear that rushing to be first in a race of life starts at least that early with the sperm. You go, wow. You can see the pretenses for war because we will distort and magnify, right, the threat. Oh, they have weapons of mass destruction. And everybody goes, oh, I got to defend myself. My driving need is to defend myself from criticism, emotional and physical attack. Ooh, and you're saying they could physically attack us because they have weapons of mass destruction? Everybody goes into fear. Everybody starts pushing for war. It's deliberate manipulation of our driving needs, although I'm sure the people that were doing it didn't have that spiritual awareness, because if they had that spiritual awareness, they would have the awareness that we're going to reap what we sow. So going to war, starting a war, is, that's not a good harvest for us. You can see what goes on in the United States with these driving needs, too, with the sale of weapons. People running out to buy weapons and ammunition and causing shortages of both. Gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it. And the invasions of countries. We want their oil. That case closed. We're going to invade. We're going to push them aside despite any opposition. We're going to try to control their natural resources. And people can see rape and pillaging and plundering and murder of citizens, but doesn't make any difference because those driving needs are all about ego, and they don't take into consideration the other people. And then you can look in these countries. Vietnam was a good example, but when Vietnam was dealing with the French, they were defending their country. And when the Americans took over, they were defending their country. These people have an unending defense of their countries by the citizens against the invaders. The French were the invaders, colonizers. We were the invaders. We're the invaders in Iraq. We're the invaders in Afghanistan. And the driving needs of the citizens of those countries will not let them just quit. They will continue to fight, because they're doing, the first driving need is to defend themselves against criticism, emotional and physical attack. They're not going to be able to rise above that, not that they would want to anyway. You go, if you turn on TV on any weekend and look at competitive sports, you're going to see these driving needs all the time in competitive sports, trying to be the first one to win a race, win the basketball game, win the baseball game, win the football game, win the soccer game. It's like those are driving needs. And then you look at, if you're unfortunate enough to notice this, and I get emails to this all the time about politics, and or about the church, Catholic Church. And you could see these corrupt people in and around politics and these pedophiles in the Catholic Church and criminals in Congress and all other criminal behaviors too are people responding to those driving needs. A lot of parent-child conflict, a lot of spouse-to-spouse conflict, sibling rivalries, etc., are evidence that the ego is controlling the consciousness of each of those people that are involved in that, causing them to, with their driving needs, to be involved in a battle royal with the other people. And so it's not unlike what I was just mentioning in terms of Iraq or Afghanistan or Vietnam. Individuals and people in societies have those same behaviors. So if you look under your own roof and you have a conflict going on with some member of your family, chances are your driving needs are conflicting with their driving needs, or theirs are conflicting with yours. And becoming mindful of that, it's like, whoa, let's elevate this game. I think you can find disharmony in any relationship. You're going to see one or more of these driving needs as the root of it. And just becoming mindful of it, now all of a sudden says, instead of the ego controlling my entire life and my personality and how I relate to other people and other things, You know what? I want to bring my driving needs under the control of my personality. I don't want these, my ego and my driving needs to control me and how I talk to people, how I think, how I feel, how I speak, how I act. No. I want to manage that on a higher level. We want to be in control of our ego, not our ego in control of us. As we go along with the descriptions in the 4-6-3-6-1-7-2, it's going to become clearer and clearer why some people are extremely controlled by their ego. It's like being possessed almost, and other people are much less controlled. The 6, the second number in this sequence, refers to my energy model of life. One day it dawned on me as I was journaling that if everything is energy, then the way we relate to energy really is important, and I need to understand that. So, as I started to explore this over days, some time ago, I think it became much clearer to me, and I think I can make it clear to you. If you look at the first step of an energy model of life, you're going to arrive at the idea that energy acquisition is the first step. Babies, just minutes after being born, are involved in the acquisition of energies. They start breathing. That's an important form of acquisition of energy. Of course, they've been acquiring energy, which is how they went from a fertilized ovum up to a full-term baby to be born. But outside of the womb, they show up with the ability to acquire energy. They breathe. They start taking in air and exhaling, inhale and exhale. And the sucking response, a baby has the ability to start sucking. Why? Because they want energy. They want energy, the energy of the mother's milk. So there's more to mother's milk than just the mother's milk, right? They want to be held close. They want to be kept warm. They want to be next to that heartbeat that they're used to for a nine-month period. That was a predictable sound. They want all that. But that ability to suck is programmed. So it's like, oh, yeah, baby can do that. But that desire to get what we want, that desire to get what we need and what we want and what we need can be summarized in a single word, energy. You go, yep, That goes from before we're born right up until after our last breath in this physical body. Because I don't know if you've got experiences with this, but this is a reality that some people on their deathbed are still trying to acquire energy, acquire control over other people. Oh, promise me you won't remarry. Promise me you won't do this. Promise me you won't sell the house. Promise me you'll, on and on and on and on. They're trying to acquire the energy of the other person so they can control it and get them to promise how they're going to live their lives in the future, even though the person who's extracting these promises is about to die. You go, wow, trying to control living bodies when you're on your deathbed, particularly somebody else's body and not your own, you're like, well, I think that might be pathological. Yeah, I think that really represents not a good thing in a human personality. But if you go back to the driving needs, you can start to understand that. We can see this idea of energy acquisition in a lot of different ways. It's normal, right? We're breathing. I'm breathing now as I'm talking. I ate breakfast a little while ago. But you can see it as a pathology with certain people when addictions, they need to acquire a certain substance or a certain feeling, and now they're addicted. Eating disorders, people who steal and hoard, gluttony, out of control shopping. It's like, what is that about? What is that about? It's about energy acquisition. The second phase in this energy model is protecting the energy that we've acquired, whether it's fairly or unfairly acquired, whether it's honestly or dishonestly acquired. We will want to protect it. Human beings and other life forms are very territorial, some much more so than others. And you go, that's mine. Because we make this stuff that we've acquired, the energy that we've acquired, we consider it part of our identity, part of our individuality. It's not a separate thing from us that can come and go. It's, wow, this is really a part of me, this jewelry, this possession, this whatever happens to be. Hiding what we have under lock and key, or guarding it, or stockpiling it. There are a lot of different things, a lot of different ways, a lot of different strategies. People try to protect what they've acquired. Cheating on income taxes. What is that? This is my money. It's my money. I don't want to give it away. The government, even though I live in this country, I don't want to give it away. We don't see it as dues that we're paying in order to participate in the life as a citizen of this country. We see it as something being removed from us. You see this all the time with not in my backyard, NIMBY. People say, oh, let's have a school for the retarded. Yeah, not in my backyard. Let's have a clinic for people with AIDS. Yeah, not in my backyard. And, well, let's put the disadvantaged, not in my backyard. You know, like, why? Because they're busy protecting their backyard. Let's raise taxes. No, I don't want to do that. They're trying to protect it. Even these billionaires don't want to pay a little bit more in taxes. They got more money than they could ever spend. But the human ego is saying, don't give it up. Don't allow anybody to take your stuff. The third energy idea is energy translation. Frankly, this process is life, right? All living creatures do it. All living beings take in energy, translate it in one form or another, and then go on with life. For instance, we eat broccoli. We don't turn into broccoli. That's not why we ate broccoli. I just had broccoli. Yeah, I know. I can tell you. You're green and you look like broccoli. That's not what happens. We take the broccoli. We chew it. We translate it into the energies that we need to grow new cells, We use it to power our minds. I want to think about something. Or our organs, or to give us energy to move our bodies around. We don't try to change into the stuff we just ingested. We translate that energy. Now, translation is called, depending on the context, by a lot of different names. So you would think, if we're talking about eating broccoli, what do? We digest it. That's a form of translation. Let's take the broccoli and make it a usable form, translate it into a usable form. Yep, we use the word digest. Growing is part of that process. Healing is that process. Even sickening, getting sick, is part of that process. Thinking is part of this translation process. Dying is as well. Decomposing is as well after death. You go, oh, we've got a lot of different ways to translate information. Yep, a lot of ways to translate energy. Yep. Somebody eats broccoli and goes and water skiing. Somebody else eats broccoli and writes a speech. Walks around the block, goes to work. A lot of different ways that energy is translated by us. And there's tremendous variety there and tremendous flexibility. And it's very appealing, which is really gives us a lot of different ways to translate it based upon what we want to do with it, which I'll talk about in a moment. The fourth phase in my energy model of life is letting go. Letting go of what no longer serves us. Letting go of what we have arrived at as having no further value to us. That is an essential activity to a living cell. It is essential to organs. It's essential to an organism like a human being or a duck or a bird or a caterpillar. We've got to be able to let go of what no longer serves us. Because if we hold on to what no longer serves us, we weigh ourselves down on the one level and we toxify on another. So if you think of it, oh, I think you're talking about excretion. Yes, I am. I'm talking about excretion. I'm also talking about exhalation, right? We breathe in air and we exhale the byproducts of cell metabolism, carbon dioxide. It's like, oh, yeah. We perspire. We recycle, we discard, we purge, we urinate. Oh, yeah, I get it. So if it doesn't serve us, let's take some of the burden off of our bodies by letting go of it. Yep, good idea. And we can do this in our bodies, we can do this in our minds, and we can do it in our environments. If you look out around your environment, look inside of your car, look inside of your closet, look inside of your dresser drawers or your desk drawer, look at what's piled around your, or not, dining room table or living room, or you go, do I have a tendency to acquire stuff and then not let it go later on? Do I just keep acquiring? That's a pretty common problem. It's a pretty common problem. And I would think it's this over acquisition of energy is a big problem in the United States with obesity, but also the failure to let go. Now, you can make the case that some of this inability to let go is because of the chemical nature of some of the nasty stuff that we eat, fast foods and factory food and GMO and other things like that, that have been so chemicalized that our body goes, I don't know what to do with this stuff. It's foreign to me. I've been around for millions and millions of years, but I don't know what this stuff is all about. So that, I think, is a real factor that we have to take into consideration. The fifth phase is expression. These are the ways we use the energy in our own unique way, the ones that we've acquired, the ones that we've protected, and the ones that we've translated, and the ones that we've held on to as compared to let go of. So now, what am I going to do with this final energy that I'm about to add value to in my own unique way, based upon all my experiences, my passions, my talents, how I want to play the game of life, what I want to contribute, those sorts of things? what my goals are. How am I going to express this energy? And this is really a very exciting area when you consider human life. Years and years ago, I became a salesperson for Yellow Pages Advertising in New York. And I come from a small town, 1,500 people. I'm kind of like a hayseed. And so I'm going into Queens on sales calls and looking at the Queens Yellow Pages or the Manhattan Yellow Pages and other counties as well. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking to myself very often, I even verbalize this to some clients, I didn't know a person could make a living doing what you're doing. I had no idea. There are so many things that people are doing to make a living. It's astonishing. If you ever want to thrill your imagination, take out your Yellow Pages and go through A to Z and just look at the categories, the classification headings that you would look. You know, it's like, wow. I didn't know people did that for a living. I didn't know people had businesses devoted solely to that particular activity. It is pretty impressive and inspiring, actually, because you go, well, that means, you know, if I can dream up something I want to do, the chances are there is a market for it somewhere in the world. You bet. Particularly what we're faced with nowadays, right? The internet. Back in that day, there was no such thing. Now you go, wow, I don't have to have a retail store in a corner that can serve people who walk by or drive by. I can actually deal with people in foreign countries. It doesn't make any difference where people are. I can sell to them if I can come up with a product or service that is interesting enough for me and interesting and valuable enough for them. And so as we look at this, what do I want to do with my energy? How do I want to express it? This is the energy that we're going to want to offer to our friends, the world, strangers, customers, our family members, anybody and everybody. It's like, and that value that we want to express is going to cause a desirable result, not only for us, but for other people. Now, I suppose we could be a serial killer or a mass murderer or somebody, and we're only thinking of ourselves, but then you would know you are so in being controlled by those driving needs that to the point of extreme pathology that you don't even recognize another being, human or otherwise. It's like, nope, I don't know about their feelings, don't care about their feelings, just not an issue. But for the rest of us, it is this: I want to offer value that other people can appreciate. Makes me feel good to create it, offer it, and makes me feel good that other people can benefit from it and exchange value with me for it. That is, I create something, I sell it to them, they give me money in exchange for it. Like, oh yeah, this is cool. So this idea of us expressing energy is where we take in the energy of all the broccoli that we've eaten, all the water we've drunk, all the coffee we've drunk, all the fruit, and you name it, that we've ingested over the course of our lives, and we translate it into our output, our physical results, our work in some physical form, so we can see the effects that it causes. The final step in the energy model is closure. So if you really look at a cycle, you can see these six steps. So closure is the endpoint that sets us up to start this whole cycle again. It's when we have a satisfactory conclusion to the cycle that we've been involved in, the energy acquisition, projection, the translation, the let go of, the expression, and here we are now coming and feeling good about it, feeling good about ourselves that we did the best we could, and not that we can't improve, so we're going to improve the next cycle. That's fine. So we just, okay, now what? What do we do? We've acquired energy, feedback from customers, or feelings of our own, and now we're going to do this all over again. To me, when I really look at this whole process, I think the goal is to gain awareness. So the goal in terms of this energy model, energy acquisition, is to gain awareness so our output is of higher quality again. So you just go, I've taken this thought in, I'm going to be able to elevate it by all these steps and then express it and then do it again. Each time the higher level consciousness is involved in this. If we can imagine that there was value to the energy that we've acquired, we got the education, that is, we've gained awareness from it, I think we can then go to a sense of closure. We can find that cycle to be satisfactory. It's not like, oh, you know, I invented a widget and I sold it and I didn't become a millionaire. Yeah, yep, I can understand that not happening. However, if you can learn something from it and grow in consciousness, which is really where the value is, and then we go, okay, maybe I have to sell more than just one widget. Maybe I got to sell, you know, 1 million widgets or 2 million widgets. But if we can get some degree of education and we can increase our awareness out of it, then we can start feeling better about ourselves. If it's true that we have these four driving needs and these six behaviors that I've described as my energy model, so what is the problem? Where does all the pain and struggle come from? This is where the three in that series of 4, 6, 3, 6, 1, 7, 2 comes in. There seems to be these three factors that are present either individually or altogether in upsets and conflicts with people. Number one, unfulfilled expectations. Number two, thwarted intentions. Three, undelivered or unreceived communications. When we don't get what we expected, when we don't get what we want, our driving needs, the ones that I mentioned early on, are threatened. And now all of a sudden we thought we were going to have this energy come to us. I'm going to acquire this energy. I told my parents, you know, when I was 2, I wanted a pony. And so now I didn't get it. That lack of energy that we didn't acquire because we expected it and it didn't show up, that triggers a fear for our survival. This is part of the human condition. When we don't get our needs met and our expectations met, we can trigger real deep-seated fears. Death is a result of insufficient energy acquired. You go, oh, yeah, couldn't stay alive. Why couldn't he stay alive? Because he couldn't acquire enough energy. He suffocated or drowned or starved to death or one thing or another. Like, if on an ego level that we associate not getting what we want with death, you can go, that pretty much explains why people, ourselves included, can overreact to unfulfilled expectations. What looked like a very small thing, all of a sudden it's gigantic to the person whose expectations went unfulfilled. When our intentions are thwarted, right, that's like, I thought this is how it was going to happen. I was trying to cause this effect. That was my intention. If I did A, B is going to happen. Well, not always. And when it doesn't happen, we can be really upset. You're going to say, okay, when our intention is not actualized, why? Well, it could be because we weren't clear in the definition of what we thought. If I do A, B is going to result. Are you sure about that? Little children, don't understand consequences. Even adults don't understand consequences a lot of times. It's like, oh, there's a cause, there's an effect. But choosing the cause to produce the effect we want sounds really simple to say, but it's not that simple to do. So when we're not clear as to that cause-effect or action-reaction, we could end up with something we never intended. End result could be not positive for us. I think the other main reason for our intentions failing to materialize is that, frankly, we have to deal with other people. Other people can be in opposition to us. Why? Because they have the same four driving needs that we have. They have that same overlay of the energy model of life that I've described. That's the game they're playing. And you come along and I come along and they're like, whoa, wait a minute. If you're first in the race of life, that means I'm not. If you have this, that means I don't. And so now all of a sudden, we're in conflict. You know this for a fact if you ever watched anything on sports or you see it with regard to pretty much anything, even in a social setting or you see it in a retail environment. If other people are more energetically committed to their needs, those driving needs, than we are, or say their clerk behind the counter is, their needs are going to be met, and ours or other people's are going to be thwarted. It's a question of how committed energetically are they to having their intentions fulfilled, satisfied. People that are intensely competitive, certain that they want to be right in a lot of different situations, we're like, whoa. You're going to come out the loser in those kind of transactions because they're not balancing self-interest. They're only interested in their self-interest. And it pays to be aware of when we're dealing with people like that. With regard to our intentions not delivering what we wanted, it could be on the level of cause and effect. Our sowing wasn't exactly conducive to producing the harvest that we intended. People who embezzle money, they're like, why'd you embezzle money? I embezzled money so I could be rich and so I could be happy. They are not likely to succeed in those intentions to be happy or maybe even be rich, except for a temporary condition. If you don't heed the law of cause and effect, you don't appreciate that you're going to harvest what you've been sowing. Stealing from somebody is the sowing. You can pretty much understand that your harvest is somebody's going to be stealing from you or stealing your life and putting you in prison. The third part of the number three is undelivered or unreceived communication. We all have plenty of upsetting experiences which after the fact, I should have said this. Or I could have said that, or I would have said this, but I would have communicated my truth, but I didn't, and we don't, mostly because of fear. Besides being afraid to assert ourselves to protect our values, oftentimes our communication could be inaccurately received. It's one thing to send a communication, right? 1, 2, 3, 4. If that's the communication, it's another thing for the person on the other end who is receiving it. We don't control the receiver. So you just heard me count 1, 2, 3, 4. And the meaning you give to that, completely up to you. I don't really have the ability to control that. You could make up all kinds of meaning. And depending on what was going on for you at the moment you heard that, you could, if you perceived that one of your driving needs was being threatened or something of the energy process, the energy model, were being threatened by that communication, your ability to accurately process my intention, what I meant, will be decreased. This is like trying to communicate to somebody who's angry. Really difficult to get through to them. Trying to communicate to somebody who's afraid. Very difficult. Somebody who's depressed. Very difficult. Somebody who's experiencing shame. Very difficult. Somebody who's craving some substance or activity. Very difficult. Somebody in pride. Very difficult to communicate with them, because those emotional states interfere with the message getting through. They're filters. They're distorters. Just looking at each of our lives about how we communicate, just how we act from an ego standpoint with those driving needs, how we go and try to satisfy our self-interest and balance our self-interest with others with regard to the energy model that I just described, and see how we have reacted in the past and also in the future as it's happening with regard to our expectations, our intentions, and our communications. Delivering on those, being clear, helps us be grounded. We can be a lot more effective. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in the book Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.